Okay, here's a verse in Hebrews. It's talking about this wholeness, which I think is amazing. It says, God, we're going to be doing Hebrews, so it's good this is in Hebrews. It's talking about faith, and it's talked about all these fantastic people of faith, massive list, long list of brilliant people who trusted God. God had a better plan for us, that their faith and our faith would come together to make one completed whole. Their lives of faith not complete apart from ours. Isn't that incredible? What this says to me is that God's not happy. God's not happy this morning because there's people he wants to bring to faith. There's people he wants to show himself to. There's people he wants to know his love. And he's not complete. We're not complete. Our faith is not complete without their faith. So we need to find these people. It's important. It's urgent. It needs exercise. We need to get up out of our seats like we did to find the pick. It's not going to be easy. We need to focus. So let's read this chapter. I don't think I'm going to read it all, but I'm going to read some bits. And then we're going to get some brothers, because brothers feature heavily. And this is an important bit. I want us to get this bit because it sets the scene. By this time, a lot of men and women of doubtful reputation were hanging around Jesus. And what were they doing? They were listening. That's amazing. Can you imagine a group of, what does it say? Doubtful reputation. Anybody here with a doubtful reputation? Okay. All right, there's one. Yeah, okay. And they were listening. The Pharisees and the religion scholars were not pleased. They were not pleased at all. They growled. Can you imagine these religious people growling? I wonder if the Pope's ever growled. He takes in sinners and eats meals with them, treating them like old friends. They didn't think Jesus should be speaking to this sort of person. It wasn't right. And he even goes and eats with them. That is not right. How can he be religious when he hangs out with those people? That was their big beef. And it's really important to understand that, because that's what triggers the story. I'm not going to read the whole lot, but we've got the lost sheep, leaves the 99, finds the one. Doesn't make sense, but he has a party. You see, parties are a common theme through these stories. Woman lost her coin, tears a house apart, finds it. Party. We like parties. If you're a Christian and you don't like parties, read Luke 15. Parties are good. Parties are what it's all about. There's a party in all of it. And then he says, there was once a man who had two sons. The younger said to his father, Father, I want right now what's coming to me. So the father divided the property between them. Can I have some brothers up here, please? I know we've got some brothers. Come on, there's some more brothers. We've got... Let's find out about brothers, as there was two brothers in the story. Okay. Right, first set of brothers. Don't come up here. We'll be coming to you. Don't worry. You're not going to escape this trial by... Tell me your name.
Benjamin.
And your name?
Theo.
Oh.
Ben.
Jesse. Lovely names. Okay, Benjamin, are you an older brother or a younger brother?
Older. Younger.
Okay.
Older. Younger.
Okay. Can you tell me? All right, let me tell you something. In the ancient Near East, when they were dividing up, say I was your dad. I'm not, I know, but say I was. All my money, say I had £30,000 worth of stuff, right? You would get, and it would be quite normal when a bloke was coming to my age, say he wanted to retire, He would say, here's my estate, here's my land, it's worth 30,000, 20 grand, it's yours, Benjamin. You look after this 20 grand, and whatever you make with that 20 grand, I've got to live off the proceeds, because I'm retired, you got it from me, it's really mine while I'm still alive, but you can have it to make money with. So 20 grand is yours, Theo, sorry, 10 grand's yours. So he gets twice as much as you. How do you feel about that, Benjamin?
Yay.
Yay. How do you feel? You feel sad?
Yeah.
Do you think that's fair?
No.
It's not fair, is it? Mm-mm. And tell me, what's he like? Does he tell you what to do generally?
Sort of.
Does he? Is he on your back? Does he say you should do it like this, you should do it like that?
A bit.
A bit?
No, I do not.
No, you don't, do you? You never do that. Are you the sensible one, then? You're the sensible one. And are you a bit of a live wire?
No.
Okay. Good. All right, let's see how it works over here. Ben, how would you feel? I'm giving you 20 grand. I've got to lift off the proceeds, so you use it well. How do you feel about that?
Happy.
Happy? Pleased about that. Okay. And are you sensible?
Are you, yes.
Do you have to tell Jesse what to do?
Sometimes.
But is he's a good brother, though, is he?
Yes.
Are you sensible?
Yes.
Good. Oh, look, that's lovely. This is brotherhood. This is brotherhood at work. A hug with a strange guy at the front with a microphone. Okay, thank you. Thank you for coming up and being good brothers. Because I know it's not easy living in families. You know, brothers and sisters. I had two elder sisters. I was the youngest. And of course, they were girls. I was a boy. So it was a bit different. But I was I could get away with what I liked, really. My elder sister was the sensible one. My middle sister was the sister with issues. And I like, but it doesn't matter. I could do it free reign. So this is why I am the indisciplined, disorganized person that I am. I blame my sisters and the order of which I was born. So you've got to blame something. But this poor father, he had two sons. One, I can imagine, he was probably a bit like me, probably a bit scatty, probably didn't like farming, didn't like the father's business, didn't really want to know. And every day his older brother, who always did it right, was on his back saying, you should be like this, you should be like that, you should do this, you should do that. Why aren't you like this? And he'd had enough. He said, okay, Dad, what about it? Time to retire. We don't know how old the dad was. And he said, yeah, okay. And then what happened? It wasn't long before the younger son, his share in the business, that's one third of this man's wealth. That's a big deal. If your son came up to you and said, or my daughter came up to me and said, Dad, I want a third of your stuff, like now. I know I'm going to get it when you're dead, but now. How would you feel? Anyway, packed his bags, left for a distant country, and there, what did he do? He did what I would have done, and what I do with lots of money, completely waste it. Did what he liked with it. And you know what? We in the West don't realise how much materially we have from God. Everything we have is from God. And materially, we're incredibly rich, fantastically rich. We are materially wealthy and yet spiritually poor. Because what came, we're spiritual famine. A famine hit that guy and the whole country began to hurt. He had to sign up with the citizens there and he had this. You can pass this round. I got this from work. These are the pods that the pigs would feed on around the time of the prodigal son. This is what the pigs would eat. And he fancied this. This, the famine was so bad, this looked good to him. So have a feel of that. See if you can take a bite if you dare. But pass that round. It doesn't look too good to me. materially rich, spiritually poor. And terrible time. We all know the story. He came to his senses, thought, oh dear, I made a bit of a mess of my life. I'm going to go back, because everybody's better off with my dad. I'm going to go back to my dad. Good decision. And he works out a speech. And then we know the story. And actually, here's an interesting thing I picked up from this book. He wasn't really able, he shouldn't have been able just to go back and walk back to his dad. There was a kind of a set of rules that he should have been punished. He would have been punished by the village because he'd disgraced the village, he'd disgraced his father, he'd gone off and wasted his money. And when he came back, there should have been a sort of a punishment from the village. And that's the reason why the father ran out, one of the reasons. He was pleased to see him, but he knew he was coming back, and he wanted to protect him. He wanted to say to the rest of the village, I don't want him punished. I accept him. I forgive him. He's part of the family again. He's restored. I think that's a lovely, lovely picture of what Jesus does for us and what God does for us. He doesn't want us to feel the punishment that we deserve. He comes out and he throws his arms around us and invites the Son in. So, the Son started the speech. I've sinned against God. I've sinned before you. I don't deserve to be called your son. But the Father wasn't listening. He called the servants and said, quick, come on, we're going to have a party. My son is back. I'm feeling whole again. What was lost is now found. This is fantastic. I'm going to have a big party. Put the family ring on his fingers, sandals on his feet, and this would involve the whole village. Everybody would have come. And this is maybe the bit that we need to focus and think about. Here's the older son. He's having a lovely time. The older son's out in the fields working. And he calls the boy to him and says, what's going on? What's dad doing? And he says, haven't you heard? Your younger son's back. How do you think the older son feel? Older sons, we've got a Ben and a Benjamin. How would you feel? Your younger son went out, wasted your money or your dad's money, and he came back and there's a party. How would you feel?
Disappointed.
Disappointed. Why would you be disappointed?
That he hadn't invited me.
Well, I think you had been invited, but the older son, how would you feel?
Angry.
That's exactly how he felt. Why would you feel angry? He'd blown the cash, hadn't he?
Yeah.
So he'd blown the cash and he'd come back as if nothing had ever happened. So, I've got the story and we're not going to do any more on that bit yet. And the brother's reaction. We're going to look at the brother's reaction in a bit. Go back to that. But I want to test us and see where our heart is this morning. So the Pharisees, they were religious. They looked at the people around Jesus and they said, those people are bad. And I think it's important that we look into our hearts and see if we can recognize good or bad people. Okay? Very important. So I want you all to shout out when you see the people in the picture. Always want you to shout out whether you think they're good or bad. Goodies or baddies. However you like. So here's the first bunch of people. They look like us. They're praying. Come on, what are they?
Goodies.
Yeah, they're goodies. Okay, here we go, goodies. Now, they're a bit different to us. Different dress, but they're still praying. So what do you reckon? Goodies. Goodies. They're goodies. Okay. These people aren't praying. On the internet, they said they're Russian football supporters. Okay, how'd you feel about them? Goodies or baddies? Baddies. And do you know what? When I was on holiday, and it happens on holiday more because you're on beaches and stuff, I thought to myself, I need a friend with a tattoo. Has anyone here got a tattoo? Anybody? Ah, I do need a friend with a tattoo. Thank you. Because I realise it's just a personal thing, but I can't get on with tattoos. I don't know why. I'm sure my daughters are going to get them at some point in their lives. And I'm going to go, oh, no. So I need a friend with a tattoo. Thank you. I need to sort that out. And they've got more tattoos than most. What about these people? They're reading the Bible. What do you reckon? Goodies? We'll go with goodies. They're religious. Must be goody. What about these people? North Korean army, this is. Baddies. We don't fancy them walking down Chapel Street right now. Okay. About these people. They like bikes. Baddies. Okay. We'll have a go at those baddies. Now, here's a difficult one. They are Italian politicians, if you want some background. Italian politicians, what do we say? Baddies. Okay. Poor people. I mean, I hope that's a bit of fun, but of course, we don't know. We've got no idea who God is reaching, what he's doing in people's hearts. We've got no idea. No idea at all. Okay, here's another one. Rich or poor? And so we'll do it by our kind of standard here. I know, you know, we're probably richer or poorer in the room, but we're talking about generally this guy. Rich. Wrong one. These people queuing for something to eat. Poor. Okay. Difficult one. I know where this comes from. Someone else knows where this comes from. What would you say? Rich or poor? Okay, I'm divided about that one. I say this is in Russia, and this is a rehabilitation centre for drug users in Russia. This guy on holiday in the Alps, new Rolls Royce. What can you say? Rich. Oh. Okay. Now, this one's a trick one, because these are actors in Hollyoaks, apparently. They did something about homelessness. So, in fact, they're probably all rich. But we all assumed we were talking financially. We all assumed that. But really, that's not what makes you rich or poor, is it? How much money you have in your pocket. What makes you rich or poor is something bigger than that, isn't it? It's something spiritual. It's something to do with our relationship with God. That's what makes us rich or poor. Jesus was poor financially, but who was richer? No one. He had all the riches of heaven. He had everything because that was his relationship with God. So that's interesting. Think about those Pharisees looking at those people saying, they're sinners. How much do we do ourselves, honestly? How much are we holding that kind of, no, they're no good. They'll never be any good. They'll never come to church. They'll never be the way we expect they should be for Jesus. Is that in our hearts? Do we judge correctly? Okay, here's a Rembrandt. This is the prodigal son. And on to the right, we're going to have a look at the older brother now and see what he does. Let's go right the way back through all those bad decisions we've made. Okay. Is it going to stop? Here we go. Further on. Okay. So the younger son's been come back, and then there's the older brother here. Here we go. So we're looking at halfway down the page. He finds out his brother has come home. His dad's throwing a party, and he doesn't fancy it. He stalks off, just like we said, angry. But what does the father, who is the picture of God, what does he do? He came out and tried to talk to him. He didn't have a go at him. He didn't punish him. He wanted to talk to him. He wanted the relationship with the older brother. And this was the older brother's problem. I've worked for you all these years serving you. I've never given you one moment of grief, but you've never done anything for me. I expected more from you. This son of yours, who did all these terrible things, he shows up and he's getting a feast. And his father said, and I put that deer in because it's not in the Message version, but it's in other versions. And just getting technical, the word there is not the same word for son that's used earlier. It's a more affectionate word. I think that's so important. His father has so much affection for the older son. He says, dear son, he's pleading with him. You're with me all the time, and everything that's mine is yours. But this is a wonderful time. We had to celebrate because this brother was dead, he's alive, lost and found. This is a big deal. Please join in. And we don't know. It ends there. We don't know what the elder brother did. We don't know if his heart was warmed or whether he went in or whether he stayed angry. But there's so much we can learn just from looking at his reaction. We learn this, that the younger brother and the elder brother both had a problem. I'm going to call it Mephis. It's a terrible heart disease that affects us all. And it cuts us off from God. It comes out in pride. It comes out in prejudice. It comes out in anger. The younger son just wanted to have a great time. He wanted his father's stuff, didn't want the father, wanted to go out and do what he wanted. He wanted to have a great time. The older son, he wanted his father's stuff, but not really for the father, and didn't think the father should be able to tell him what he wanted to do with it. He wanted the father's stuff for his own respect. He wanted two-thirds of a bigger thing. He wanted people to look at him and say, isn't he a good son? Isn't he a wonderful son? Isn't he the perfect son? Because that's how he described himself. I've never given you any grief. I've done all the right things. How come I'm not getting the party? So his heart was about as far away from the father's heart as the younger son. They were both out of relationship. And the thing was, the people that heard this would have understood it. They would have looked at this story, the Pharisees, and they'd have thought, okay, he's talking about the sinners getting right with God, and he's talking about us as the older sons who've done everything right, and we don't know what's happened. And something that came out of this book that I really want to share, and I'm not going to go on too much longer, but I think it's so important. This, for me, and I think he says, we often think that the party was for the younger son. And it came out and it was a big revelation. No, the party was for the father. It was the father who was celebrating his wholeness, his completeness, that the younger son had come home. And that's why he wanted the older son to join in. Because it was his party. And that's why it was such a great rebuke and a terrible sin and shame that the older son was off stropping off thinking about himself. Me first. Me first. He didn't really want to know what his father wanted. He just wanted his own way. He wanted to tell his father what he should do with his resources, how he should spend his money, who he accepted into the family, and who he kept out of the family. Me first. We're all susceptible to that disease. We all think we know what God should be doing, what God shouldn't be doing. Incredibly, I've even had people say to me that we shouldn't tell Jesus, shouldn't talk about Jesus when we go on our Christians Against Poverty visits, because people are susceptible and, you know, they're at a difficult stage. So you're manipulating people if you tell people about Jesus. I was desperately sad when we came to the conclusion from our gift workshops that we had no gifted evangelists or no people who felt they had a gift of evangelism. I think we all have. Surely evangelism is just telling people about Jesus. Telling people your story. That's what evangelism is. We all have that gift. And I, you know, I'm going to go on. Do you mind if I go on a rant? Children, play, have fun. You don't have to know. You don't have to listen to this bit. I'm going to just have a quick rant. People say, and you've heard it said, faith is a journey. Has everybody heard that? Faith is a journey. They all say, faith is a journey. Faith is a journey. What does that mean? What does that mean? I was thinking, I was in a service station. I was thinking, if faith is a journey, because I was on a long journey, stuck in a service station, then maybe church is a service station. You know, it's kind of there because you might need it. It's kind of convenient, but you don't hang around very long and you get out as soon as you don't like it and carry on your journey. Maybe that's what church is to us. Maybe that's why we don't evangelize, because you don't want to communicate in a service station. You just want to get in, get out. I've done my thing. I needed it. It was great. I've picked up what I wanted. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Do you know, the more I've read this parable, the more I thought, actually, faith is a destination. Faith is where I want to be. Faith is where I want to live. Faith is where my family is. Faith is where I'm at home. That's where I want to get to. That's where I want to live. That's where I want to be. That's who I want to be. I want to be faithful. That's where I want to get to. I don't, you know, I will have different experiences in my house. My house will grow. My house will have its phases. But it's a destination. It's a destination. It's where I want to spend my time. It's where I want to be. Anyway, rant over. So we come to, how are we doing with others and faith? God's lost something. He's looking out for people. He's wanting them to join in a party. There's a party going on. Are we like the older brother? Oh, I don't want to be part of that. Thank you very much. That's not how I figure things should be. Or are we happy to be part of God's family, whatever he's doing with it, however he works in it? That's really what's been coming through to me from just reading this passage. We're going to sing and worship again now, just as we close. But please, if you've had anything from that, we'll pray at the end after we've sung. You know, spend some time in Luke 15. I'll lend you these books. Have a look at that. It's just an amazing amazing parable. And I'll end with this because it's so important. Do you know, people say, look at the miracles of Jesus. That proves his deity. That proves he is who he said he was. Do you know, just looking at these, I don't know how many lines they are, how many words there are. I thought, you know, you don't need to look at the miracles. Look at the parables. Look at how they bring out the heart of God. Look at how they shine a light on our hearts. You know, how can you miss the deity of Christ in that? Who else could have spoken words of such truth and such ageless, timeless accuracy and insight? So we'll finish there. We'll get the band up. We'll sing. And then we'll pray at the end. I hope it's been helpful. Did someone eat something? Oh, sorry. We need to get the offering. Tilly, can you bring the offering up? We'll just pray over the offerings at the end. Yeah, that's it. That's the offering. Right, we just stay for a little prayer of the offering. We say, thank you, Jesus, for giving us so much. Help us to use it well for your kingdom. Help us to appreciate all you've given us. And help us to glorify you with it. Amen. I'll put that there. Right then. And one last thing, sorry, while I think about it. I want to change the name of the parable, having lived with it. It's not really the good, it's not the prodigal son, it's really the good father. It's really all about the father. And I have lost my pick this time. I'll put it down here. There we go. So that's why we're going to sing this one. Please stand to sing.